Chapter 11. Arthur. When Petulia had gone, Mistress Weatherwax stamped her feet and said, "Let's go, young lady. It's about 8 miles to Shearcliff. They'll have started before we get there." "What about the hiver? Oh, it can come if it likes." Mistress Weatherwax smiled. "Oh, don't frown like that. There'll be more than 300 witches at the trials, and they're right out in the country. It'll be as safe as anything. Or do you want to meet the hiver now? We could probably do that. It don't seem to move fast."
"No," said Tiffany, louder than she'd intended. "No, because things aren't what they seem. We do things wrong. I can't explain it. It's because of the third wish,
which you don't know what it is."
"Yes, but I will soon, I hope."
The witch stared at her.
"Yes, I hope so too," she said.
"Well, no point in standing around. Let's get moving."
And with that, the witch picked up a blanket and set off as though being pulled by a string.
"We haven't even had anything to eat," said Tiffany, running after her.
"I had a lot of voles last night," said Mistress Weatherwax over her shoulder.
"Yes, but you didn't actually eat them, did you?" said Tiffany. "It was the owl that actually ate them."
"Technically, yes," Mistress Weatherwax admitted. "But if you think you've been eating voles all night, you'd be amazed how much you don't want to eat anything the next morning.
Or ever again." She nodded at a distant departing figure of Petulia.
"Friend of yours?" she said as they set out.
"If she is, I don't deserve it," said Tiffany.
"Hm," said Mistress Weatherwax.
"Well, sometimes we get what we don't deserve."
For an old woman, Mistress Weatherwax could move quite fast. She strode over the moors as if distance was a personal insult. But she was good at something else, too. She knew about silence. There was the swish of her long skirt as it snagged the heathers, but somehow that became part of the background noise. In the silence, as she walked, Tiffany could still hear the memories. There were hundreds of them left behind by the hiver. Most of them were so faint that they were nothing more than slight, uncomfortable feeling in her head. But the ancient tiger still burned brightly in the back of her brain, and behind that was the giant lizard. They'd been killing machines, the most powerful creatures in their world once. The hiver had taken them both, and then they died fighting. Always taking fresh bodies, always driving the owners mad with the urge for power, which would always end up getting them killed. And just as Tiffany wondered why, a memory said, "Because it is frightened." Frightened of what, Tiffany thought? It's so powerful.
"Who knows? But it's mad with terror, completely binkers."
"You're sensibility bustle, aren't you?" said Tiffany, and then her ears informed her that she'd said this aloud.
"Talkative, ain't he?" said Mistress Weatherwax. "He talked in your sleep the other night. He used to have a very high opinion of himself. I reckon that's why his memory is held together for so long."
"He doesn't know binkers from bonkers, though," said Tiffany.
"Well, memory fades," said Mistress Weatherwax.
She stopped and leaned against a rock. She sounded out of breath.
"Are you all right, Mistress?" said Tiffany.
"Sound as a bell," said Mistress Weatherwax, wheezing slightly. "Just getting my second wind? Anyway, it's only another 6 miles.
"I notice you're limping a bit," said Tiffany.
"Do you indeed? Then stop noticing."
The shout echoed off the hills, full of command. Mistress Weatherwax coughed when the echo had died away. Tiffany had gone pale.
"It seems to me," said the old witch, "that I might just have been a shade on the sharp side there. It was probably the voles." She coughed again. "Them as knows me, or has earned it one way or the other, calls me Granny Weatherwax. I shall not take it amiss if you did the same."
"Granny Weatherwax?" said Tiffany, shocked out of her shock by this new shock.
"Not technically," said Mistress Weatherwax quickly. "It's what they call a honorific, like old Murder so-and-so, or Goody Thingy, or Nanny What's-Her-Name, to show that a witch has been... Tiffany didn't know whether to laugh or burst into tears.
"I know," she said.
"You do?"
"Like Granny Aching," said Tiffany. "She was my granny, but everyone on the chalk called her Granny Aching. Mrs. Aching wouldn't have worked, she knew. You needed a big, warm, billowing, open kind of word. Granny Aching was there for everybody."
"It's like being everyone's grandmother," she added, and didn't add, "who tells them stories."
"Well then, perhaps so. Granny Weatherwax it is," said Granny Weatherwax, and added quickly, "but not technically. Now we'd best be moving." She straightened up and set off again.
Granny Weatherwax. Tiffany tried it out in her head. She'd never known her other grandmother, who died before she was born. Calling someone else Granny was strange, but oddly, it seemed right. And you could have, too. The hiver followed them. Tiffany could feel it,
but it was keeping its distance. Well, there's a trick to take the trial, she thought. Granny, her brain tingled as she thought the word, Granny has got a plan, she must have. But things weren't right. There was another thought she wasn't quite having. It ducked out of sight every time she thought she had it. The hiver wasn't acting right. She made sure she kept up with Granny Weatherwax. As they got nearer to the trials, there were clues. Tiffany saw at least three broomsticks in the air heading the same way. They reached a proper track, too, and groups of people were travelling in the same direction. There were a few pointy hats among them, which was a definite clue. The track dropped on down through some woods, came up in a patchwork of little fields, and headed for a tall hedge, from behind which came the sound of a brass band playing a medley of songs from the shows, although by the sound of it, no two musicians could agree on what song or which show. Tiffany jumped when she saw a balloon sail up above the trees, catch the wind and swoop away, but it turned out to be just a balloon and not a lump of excess brine. She could tell this because it was followed by a long scream of rage mixed with a roar of complaint.
I want a balloon!
Which is the traditional sound of a very small child learning that with balloons, as with life itself, it is important to know when not to let go of the string. The whole point of balloons is to teach small children this.
However, on this occasion, a broomstick with a pointy-hatted passenger rose above the trees, caught up with the balloon, and towed it back down to the trials ground.
"Didn't used to be like this," Granny Weatherwax grumbled as they reached the gate. "When I was a girl, we used to meet up in some meadow somewhere all by ourselves. But now, oh no, it has to be a grand day out for all the family. Ha!"
There had been a crowd around the gates leading into the field, but there was something about that "ha." The crowd parted as if by magic, and the women pulled their children a little closer to them as Granny walked right up to the gate. There was a boy there selling tickets and wishing now that he'd never been born. Granny Weatherwax stared at him. Tiffany saw his ears go red.
"Two tickets, young man," said Granny.
Little bits of ice tinkled off her words.
That'll be one child and one senior citizen,
the young man quavered. Granny leaned forward and said,
"What is a senior citizen, young man?"
It's like, you know, old folks,"
the boy mumbled. Now his hands were shaking. Granny leaned farther forward. The boy really, really wanted to step back, but his feet were rooted to the ground. All he could do was bend backwards.
"Young man," said Granny, "I am not now, nor shall I ever be, an old folk. We'll take two tickets, which I see on that board there is a penny apiece."
Her hand shot out, fast as an adder. The boy made a noise like "nee" as he leapt back.
"Here's tuppence," said Granny Weatherwax.
Tiffany looked at Granny's hand. The first finger and thumb were held together, but there did not appear to be any coins between them. Nevertheless, the young man, grinning horribly, took the total absence of coins very carefully between his thumb and finger. Granny twitched two tickets out of his other hand.
"Thank you, young man," she said, and walked into the field.
Tiffany ran after her.
"What did—"
she began, but Granny Weatherwax raised a finger to her lips, grasped Tiffany's shoulder, and swiveled her around. The ticket seller was still staring at his fingers. He even rubbed them together. Then he shrugged, held them over his leather money bag, and let go. Clink, clink. The crowd around the gate gave a gasp, and one or two of them started to applaud. The boy looked around with a sick kind of grin, as if, of course, he'd expected that to happen.
"Ah, right," said Granny Weatherwax happily. "And now I could just do with a cup of tea, and maybe a sweet biscuit."
"Granny, there are children here, not just witches." People were looking at them. Granny Weatherwax jerked Tiffany's chin up so that she could look into her eyes.
"Look around, eh? You can't move down here for amulets and wands and whatnot. It'll be bound to keep away, eh?"
Tiffany turned to look. There were sideshows all around the field. A lot of them were funfair stuff that she'd seen before at agricultural shows around the chalk. Roll a penny, lucky dip, bobbing for piranhas, that sort of thing. The ducking stool was very popular among young children on such a hot day. There wasn't a fortune-telling tent because no fortune-teller would turn up at an event where so many visitors were qualified to argue and answer back. But there were a number of witch stalls. Zack's had a huge tent, with a display dummy outside wearing a skyscraper hat and a zephyr billow cloak, which had drawn a crowd of admirers. The other stalls were smaller, but they were thick with things that glittered and tinkled,
and they were doing a brisk trade among the younger witches. There were whole stores full of dream catchers and curse nets, including the new self-emptying ones. It was odd to think of witches buying them, though. It was like fish buying umbrellas. Surely a hiver wouldn't come here with all these witches. She turned to Granny Weatherwax. Granny Weatherwax wasn't there. It is hard to find a witch at the witch trials. That is, it is too easy to find a witch at the witch trials, but very hard to find the one you're looking for, especially if you suddenly feel lost and all alone, and you can feel panic starting to open inside you like a fern. Most of the older witches were sitting at trestle tables in a huge roped-off area. They were drinking tea. Pointy hats bobbed as tongues wagged. Every woman seemed capable of talking while listening to all the others at the table at the same time, although this talent isn't confined to witches. It was no place to search for an old woman in black with a pointy hat. The sun was quite high in the sky now. The field was filling up. Witches were circling to land at the far end, and more people were pouring in through the gateway. The noise was intense. Everywhere Tiffany turned, black hats were scurrying. Pushing her way through the throng, she looked desperately for a friendly face like Miss Tick or Miss Level or Petulia. If it came to it, an unfriendly one would do, even Mrs. Earwig. And she tried not to think. She tried not to think that she was terrified and alone in this huge crowd, and that up on the hill, invisible, the hiver now knew this because just a tiny part of it was her. She felt the hiver stir. She felt it begin to move. Tiffany stumbled through the chattering group of witches, their voices sounding shrill and unpleasant. She felt ill, as though she'd been in the sun too long. The world was spinning.
"A remarkable thing about a hiver," a reedy voice began somewhere in the back of her head, "is that its hunting pattern mimics that of the common shark, among other creatures."
"I do not want a lecture, Mr. Bustle," Tiffany mumbled. "I do not want you in my head." But the memory of Sensibility Bustle had never taken much notice of other people when he was alive, and it wasn't going to begin now. It went on in its self-satisfied squeak,
"in that, once it has selected its prey, it will completely ignore other attractive targets."
She could see all the way across the trials field, and something was coming. It moved through the crowd like the wind through a field of grass. You could plot its progress by the people. Some fainted. Some yelped and turned around. Some ran. Witches stopped their gossip, chairs were overturned, and the shouting started. But it wasn't attacking anything. It was only interested in Tiffany. Like a shark, thought Tiffany, the killer of the sea where worse things happen. Tiffany backed away, the panic filling her up. She bumped into the witches hurrying towards the commotion and shouted at them,
"You can't stop it! You don't know what it is! You'll flail at it and wave glittery sticks and it will keep coming! It will keep coming!"
She put her hands into her pockets and touched the lucky stone, and the string, and the piece of chalk. If this was a story, she thought bitterly, I'd trust in my heart and follow my star and all that other stuff, and it would all turn out all right, right now, by tinkly magic. But you're never in a story when you need to be. Story, story, story. The third wish is the important one. In stories, the genie, or the witch, or the magic cat offers you three wishes. Three wishes. She grabbed a hurrying witch and looked into the face of Anagramma, who stared at her in terror and tried to carry her away.
"Please don't do anything to me, please!" she cried. "I'm your friend, aren't I?"
"If you like. But that wasn't me, and I'm better now," said Tiffany, knowing she was lying. It had been her, and that was important. She had to remember that. "Quick, Anagramma! What's the third wish? Quickly, when you get three wishes, what's the third wish?" Anagramma's face screwed up into the affronted frown she wore when something had the nerve not to be understandable.
"But why do—"
"Don't think about it, please, just answer."
"Well, could be anything. Being invisible, or blonde, or anything," Anagramma burbled,
her mind coming apart at the seams. Tiffany shook her head and let her go. She ran to an old witch who was staring at the commotion.
"Please, mistress, this is important. In stories, what's the third wish? Don't ask me why, please, just remember."
Happiness. It's happiness, isn't it?" said the old lady. "Yes, definitely. Health, wealth, and happiness. Now, if I was you, I'd—"
"Happiness, happiness? Thank you," said Tiffany, and looked around desperately for someone else. It wasn't happiness, she knew that in her boots. You couldn't get happiness by magic, and that was another clue right there.
There was Miss Tick, hurrying between the tents. There was no time for half measures. Tiffany pulled her around and shouted, "Hello, Miss Tick. Yes, I'm fine. Hope you are well, too. What is the third wish? Quickly, this is important. Please don't argue or ask questions. There isn't time." Miss Tick, to her credit, hesitated only for a moment or two. "To have 100 more wishes, isn't it?" she said. Tiffany stared at her and then said, "Thank you. It isn't. That's a clue, too." "Tiffany, there's a..." Miss Tick began, but Tiffany had seen Granny Weatherwax. She was standing in the middle of the field, in a big square that had been off for some reason. No one seemed to notice her. She was watching the frantic witches around the hiver, where there was an occasional flash and sparkle of magic. She had a calm, faraway look. Tiffany brushed Miss Tick's arm away, ducked under the rope, and ran up to her. "Granny!" The blue eyes turned to her. "Yes?" "In stories, where the genie or the magic frog or the fairy godmother gives you 3 wishes, what's the third wish?"
"Ah, stories," said Granny. "That's easy. Any story worth telling that knows the way of the world, the third wish is the one that undoes the arm the first 2 wishes caused."
"Yes, that's it. That's it," shouted Tiffany, and the words piling up behind the question poured out. "It's not evil, it can't be. It hasn't got a mind of its own. This is all about wishes, our wishes. It's like in the stories where they..." "Calm down, take a deep breath," said Granny. She took Tiffany by the shoulders so that she faced the panicking crowd. "You got frightened for a moment, and now it's coming, and it's not going to turn back, not now, because it's desperate. It don't even see the crowd. They don't mean a thing to it. It's you it wants. It's you it's after. You should be the one who faces it. Are you ready?"
"But supposing I lose?"
"I never got where I am today by supposing I was going to lose, young lady. You beat it once, you can do it again."
"But I could turn into something terrible."
"Then you'll face me," said Granny. "You'll face me on my ground. But that won't happen, will it? You were fed up with grubby babies and silly women. Then this is the other stuff. It's noon now. They should have started the trials proper, but ha, it looks as though people have forgotten. Now then, do you have it in you to be a witch by noonlight, far away from your hills?"
"Yes."
There was no other answer. Not to Granny Weatherwax. Granny Weatherwax bowed low and then took a few steps back. "In your own time, then, madam," she said. "Wishes, wishes, wishes," thought Tiffany, distracted, fumbling in her pockets for the bits to make a shamble. "It's not evil. It gives us what we think we want. And what do people ask for? More wishes." You couldn't say, "A monster got into my head and made me do it." She'd wished the money was hers. The hiver just took her at her thought. You couldn't say, "Yes, but I'd never have really taken it." The hiver used what it found, the little secret wishes, the desires, the moments of rage, all the things that real humans knew how to ignore. It didn't let you ignore them. Then, as she fumbled to tie the pieces together, the egg flipped out of her hands, trusted in gravity, and smashed on the toe of her boot. She stared at it, the blackness of despair darkening the noon light. "Why did I try this? I've never made a shamble that worked, so why did I try?" "Because I believed it had to work this time, that's why. Like in a story. Suddenly it would all be all right. But this isn't a story, and there are no more eggs." There was a scream, but it was high up, and the sound of it took Tiffany home in the bounce of a heartbeat. It was a buzzard, and the eye of the sun getting bigger in its plunge towards the field. It soared up again as it passed over Tiffany's head, fast as an arrow, and as it did so, something small let go its load on the buzzard's talons with a cry of, "Heavens!" Rob Anybody dropped like a stone, but there was a thwop, and suddenly a balloon of cloth snapped open above him. 2 balloons, in fact. Or, to put it another way, Rob Anybody had borrowed Hamish's parachute. He let go of them as soon as they'd slowed him down and dropped neatly into the shamble.
"Did you think we'd leave you?" he shouted, holding on to the strings. "I'm under a geese, me. Get on wi' it right noo."
"What? I can't," said Tiffany, trying to shake him off. "Not with you. I'll kill you. I always crack the eggs."
"What goose?" "Dinna argue," shouted Rob, bouncing up and down in the strings. "Do it, or you know the hag of the hills, and I know you are."
People were running past now. Tiffany glanced up. She thought she could see the hiver now as a moving shape in the dust. She looked at the tangle in her hands and at Rob's grinning face. The moment twanged. "A witch deals with things," said her second thoughts. "Get past the I can't."
"Okay. Why hasn't it ever worked before?"
"Because there was no reason for it to work. I didn't need it to work. I need it to help me now,
No, I need me to help me. So think about it. Ignore the noise. Ignore the hiver rolling towards me over the trodden grass. She'd used the things she'd had, so that was right. Calm down. Slow down. Look at the shamble. Think about the moment. There were all the things from home. No, not all the things. Not all the things at all. This time she felt the shape of what wasn't there, and tugged at the silver horse around her neck, breaking its chain, then hanging it in the threads. Suddenly her thoughts were as cool and clear as ice, as bright and shiny as they needed to be. Let's see. That looks better there, and that needs to be pulled this way. The movement jerked the silver horse into life, and it spun gently, passing through the threads, and Rob anybody, who said, "Didn't hurt a bit. Keep going." Tiffany felt a tingle in her feet. The horse gleamed as it turned. "I don't want to hurry ye," said Rob anybody, "but hurry." "I'm far from home," thought Tiffany, in the same clear way, "but I have it in my eye. Now I open my eyes. Now I open my eyes again. Ah. Can I be a witch away from my hills? Of course I can. I never really leave you, land under wave." Shepherds on the chalk felt the ground shake like thunder under the turf. Birds scattered from the bushes. The sheep looked up. Again the ground trembled. Some people said a shadow crossed the sun. Some people said they heard the sound of hooves. And a boy, trying to catch hares in the little valley of the horse, said the hillside had burst and a horse had leapt out like a wave as high as the sky, with a mane like the surf of the sea and a coat as white as chalk. He said it had galloped into the air like rising mist and flown towards the mountains like a storm. He got punished for telling stories, of course, but he thought it was worth it. The shamble glowed, silver coursed along the threads. It was coming from Tiffany's hands, sparking like stars. In that light, she saw the hiver reach her and spread out until it was all around her, invisibility made visible. It rippled and reflected the light oddly. In those glints and sparkles, there were faces, wavering and stretching like reflections in water. Time was going slowly. She could see beyond the wall of hiver witches staring at her. One had lost her hat in the commotion, but it was hanging in the air. It hadn't had time to fall yet. Tiffany's fingers moved. The hiver shimmered in the air, disturbed like a pond when a pebble has been dropped into it. Tendrils of it reached towards her. She felt its panic, felt its terror as it found itself caught. "Welcome," said Tiffany. "Welcome," said the hiver in Tiffany's own voice. "Yes, you are welcome in this place. You are safe here." "No, we are never safe." "You are safe here," Tiffany repeated. "Please," said the hiver, "shelter us." "The wizard was nearly right about you," said Tiffany. "You hid in other creatures. But he didn't wonder why. What are you hiding from?" "Everything," said the hiver. "I think I know what you mean," said Tiffany. "Do you? Do you know what it feels like to be aware of every star, every blade of grass?" "Yes, you do. You call it opening your eyes again, but you do it for a moment. We have done it for eternity. No sleep, no rest, just endless, endless experience, endless awareness of everything, all the time. How we envy you, envy you, lucky humans who can close your minds to the endless, cold deeps of space. You have this thing you call boredom. That is the rarest talent in the universe. We heard a song. It went, 'Twinkle, twinkle, little star.' What power. What wondrous power. You can take a billion, trillion tons of flaming matter, a furnace of unimaginable strength, and turn it into a little song for children. You build little worlds, little stories, little shells around your minds, and that keeps infinity at bay and allows you to wake up in the morning without screaming." "Completely binkers," said a cheerful voice at the back of Tiffany's memory. You just couldn't keep Dr. Bustle down. "Piteous, yes, piteous," said the voices of the hiver. "No shield for us, no rest for us, no sanctuary. But you, you withstood us. We saw that in you. You have minds within minds. Hide us." "You want silence," said Tiffany. "Yes, and more than silence," said the voice of the hiver. "You humans are so good at ignoring things.
You are almost blind and almost deaf. You look at a tree and see just a tree, a stiff weed. You don't see its history, feel the pumping of the sap, hear every insect in the bark, sense the chemistry of the leaves, notice the 100 shades of green, the tiny movements to follow the sun, the subtle growth of the wood. But you don't understand us, said Tiffany. I don't think any human could survive you. You give us what you think we want, as soon as we want it, just like in fairy stories. And the wishes always go wrong. Yes, we know that now. We have an echo of you now. We have understanding, said the hiver. So now we come to you with a wish. It is the wish that puts the others right. Yes, said Tiffany. That's always the last wish, the third wish. It's the one that says, make this not have happened. Teach us the way to die, said the voices of the hiver. I don't know it. All humans know the way, said the voices of the hiver. You walk it every day of your short, short lives. You know it. We envy you your knowledge. You know how to end. You are very talented. I must know how to die, Tiffany thought. Somewhere deep down, let me think. Let me get past the I can't. She held up the glittering shamble. Shafts of light still spun off it, but she didn't need it anymore. She could hold the power in the centre of herself. It was all a matter of balance. The light died. Rob Anybody was still hanging in the threads, but all his hair had come unplaited and stood out from his head in a great red ball. He looked stunned. I could just murder a kebab, he said. Tiffany lowered him to the ground, where he swayed slightly. Then she put the rest of the shamble in her pocket. Thank you, Rob, she said. But I want you to go now. It could get serious. It was, of course, the wrong thing to say. I'm not leaving, he snapped. I promised Jeannie to keep you safe. Let's get on with it. There was no arguing. Rob was standing in that half-crouch of his, fists bunched, chin out, ready for anything and burning with defiance. Thank you, said Tiffany, and straightened up. Death is right behind us, she thought. Life ends, and there's death, waiting. So it must be close. Very close. It would be a door, yes, an old door, old wood, dark too. She turned. Behind her, there was a black door in the air. The hinges would creak, she thought. When she pushed it open, they did. So, she thought, this isn't exactly real. I'm telling myself a story I can understand about doors, and I'm fooling myself just enough for it all to work. I just have to keep balanced on that edge for it to go on working too. That's as hard as not thinking about a pink rhinoceros. And if Granny Weatherwax can do that, I can too. Beyond the door, black sand stretched away under a sky of pale stars. There were some mountains on the distant horizon. You must help us through, said the voices of the hiver. If you'll take my advice, you'll no do that, said Rob Anybody from Tiffany's ankle. I dinna trust the scanner one wee bitty. There's part of me in there. I trust that, she said. I did say you don't have to come, Rob. Oh, aye, and I'm to see you go through there alone, am I? You'll not find me leaving you now. You've got a clan and a wife, Rob. Aye, and so I will not dishonour them by letting you step across death's threshold alone, said Rob Anybody firmly. So, thought Tiffany as she stared through the doorway, this is what we do. We live on the edges. We help those who can't find the way. She took a deep breath and stepped across. Nothing much changed. The sand felt gritty underfoot and crunched when she walked over it, as she expected. But when it was kicked up, it fell back as slowly as thistledown, and she hadn't expected that. The air wasn't cold, but it was thin and prickly to breathe. The door shut softly behind her. Thank you, said the voices of the hiver. What do we do now? Tiffany looked around her and up at the stars. They weren't ones that she recognized. You die, I think, she said. But there is no me to die, said the voices of the hiver. There is only us. Tiffany took a deep breath. This was about words, and she knew about words. Here is a story to believe, she said. Once we were blobs in the sea, and then fishes, and then lizards and rats, and then monkeys and hundreds of things in between. This hand was once a fin. This hand once had claws.
In my human mouth I have the pointed teeth of a wolf, and the chisel teeth of a rabbit, and the grinding teeth of a cow. Our blood is as salty as the sea we used to live in. When we're frightened, the hair on our skin stands up just like it did when we had fur. We are history. Everything we've ever been on the way to becoming us, we still are. Would you like the rest of the story?
Tell us, said the hiver.
I'm made up of the memories of my parents and grandparents, all my ancestors. They're in the way I look, in the colour of my hair, and I'm made up of everyone I've ever met who's changed the way I think. So, who is me?
The piece that just told us that story, said the piece that's truly you.
Well, yes, but you must have that too. You know you say you're us. Who is it saying it? Who is saying you're not you? You're not different from us. We're just much, much better at forgetting. And we know when not to listen to the monkey.
You've just puzzled us, said the hiver.
The old bit of our brains that wants to be head monkey and attacks when it's surprised, said Tiffany.
It reacts. It doesn't think. Being human is knowing when not to be the monkey or the lizard or any of the other old echoes.
But when you take people over, you silence the human part. You listen to the monkey. The monkey doesn't know what it needs, only what it wants.
No, you are not an us. You are a I.
I? Me? Said the hiver.
I? Who am I?
Do you want a name? That helps.
Yes, a name.
I've always liked Arthur as a name.
Arthur, said the hiver.
I like Arthur too. And if I am, I can stop.
What happens next?
The creatures you took over, didn't they die?
Yes, said the Arthur. But I didn't see what happened. They just stopped being here.
Tiffany looked around at the endless sand. She couldn't see anybody, but there was something out there that suggested movement. It was the occasional change in the light, perhaps, as if she was catching glimpses of something she was not supposed to see.
I think, she said, that you have to cross the desert.
What's on the other side? Asked Arthur.
Tiffany hesitated.
Some people think you go to a better world, she said.
Some people think you come back to this one in a different body.
And some think there's just nothing. They think you just stop.
And what do you think? Arthur asked.
I think that there are no words to describe it, said Tiffany.
Is that true? Said Arthur.
I think that's why you have to cross the desert, said Tiffany, to find out.
I will look forward to it.
Thank you. Goodbye, Arthur. She felt the hiver fall away. There wasn't much sign of it, a movement of a few sand grains, a sizzle in the air, but it slid away slowly across the black sand.
And bad cess and good riddance to you,
Rob Anybody shouted after it.
No, said Tiffany, don't say that.
Aye, but it killed folk to stay alive.
It didn't want to. It didn't know how people work.
That was a fine load of blethers you gave it at any rate, said Rob admiringly. Not even a Gonagall could make up a load of blethers like that.
Tiffany wondered if it had been. Once, when the wandering teachers had come to the village, she had paid half a dozen eggs for a morning's education on wonders of the universe. That was expensive for education, but it had been thoroughly worth it. The teacher had been a little crazy, even for a teacher, but what he'd said had seemed to make absolute sense. One of the most amazing things about the universe, he had said, was that sooner or later everything is made up of everything else, although it'll probably take millions and millions of years for this to happen. The other children had giggled or argued, but Tiffany knew that what had once been tiny living creatures was now the chalk of the hills. Everything went around, even stars. That had been a very good morning, especially since she'd been refunded half an egg for pointing out that universe had been spelt wrong. Was it true? Maybe that didn't matter. Maybe it just had to be true enough for Arthur. Her eyes, the inner eyes that opened twice, were beginning to close. She could feel the power draining away. You couldn't stay in that state for long. You became so aware of the universe that you'd stopped being aware of you. How clever of humans to have learned how to close their minds. Was there anything so amazing in the universe as boredom? She sat down, just for a moment, and picked up a handful of the sand. It rose above her hand, twisting like smoke, reflecting the starlight, then settled back as if it had all the time in the world. She had never felt this tired. She still heard the inner voices. The hiver had left memories behind, just a few. She could remember when there had been no stars, and when there had been no such thing as yesterday. She knew what was beyond the sky and beneath the grass. But she couldn't remember when she had last slept, properly slept, in a bed. Being unconscious didn't count. She closed her eyes and closed her eyes again. Someone kicked her hard on the foot.
"Dinna gae to sleep," Rob anybody shouted. "Not here. You canna gae to sleep here. Rise and shine."
Still feeling muzzy, Tiffany pushed herself back onto her feet through gentle swirls of rising dust and turned to the dark door. It wasn't there. There were her footprints in the sand, but they went only a few feet and, anyway, were slowly disappearing. There was nothing around her but dead desert forever. She turned back to look towards the distant mountains, but her view was blocked by a tall figure, all in black, holding a scythe. It hadn't been there before.
"Good afternoon," said Death.